Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Professor Barry Shoup, he's a former executive director of the NICD, the National Institute of Communicable Diseases, and professor emeritus of virology at Wits University. We're speaking, of course, about COVID-19, and today's topic, there's been a second infection with COVID found in a man in Hong Kong. And Professor Shoup, good afternoon. He's here to tell us all about that.
Good afternoon, Paul. Hi. Yeah, this is a very topical question. In fact, I get many, many questions about second infections, and I think we've actually had it on the show as well, maybe once or twice. And I think, you know, it's a big question, because I get often asked, people that have recovered, are they protected? Do second infections occur after recovery? And of course, this is a very relevant question, because people want to know, after they recovered, do they still have to take precautions? Are they still kind of at risk of getting infection? In fact, there's actually a entity called the Immunity Passport, where they look at, where at one stage they thought, well, people that have recovered from infection, they can then be put into kind of situations like in the healthcare sector. They don't have to be so concerned about picking up infections. They don't need to have the same rigorous screening procedures and so on. It's also very relevant when one is designing a vaccine to look for, what do you look for in terms of immunity and so on. So there have been a couple of anecdotal reports about second infections. The problem is that we didn't really know, are they actually relapses of the first infection, or are they genuine second infections? We do know that there is some evidence of immunity, but unfortunately it doesn't seem to be consistent. Some people that recover do develop what we call neutralizing antibodies. In other words, the antibodies that will prevent the virus infecting cells. We know from the previous SARS outbreak of 2003 that some people did retain a degree of immunity. Also, people that have recovered, some of them who donate their plasma, their blood, and separate the plasma from that one, can use it to treat patients. And also, there have been some animal studies where they've looked at laboratory animals who they've infected with SARS-CoV virus 2, the virus of COVID, and challenged them afterwards, and there is some degree of protection. So there is that kind of basis to believe that there is some immunity which will protect people from second infections. Now, this particular case study, this individual from Hong Kong, this is now a genuine second infection. And there's very good evidence that it's a genuine second infection. It's an interesting case study, because it's a chap, a 33-year-old man. His first infection, he had in March of this year. And he was quite sick. Not hospitalized, but he was certainly sick for a period of time. And then he recovered completely. And then 4.5 months later, now in August, he traveled to Spain and returned to Hong Kong via United Kingdom. And then a routine saliva sample for routine screening was taken from him at Hong Kong Airport, and that turned out to be positive on the 15th of August. But what was very interesting is when they looked at the viruses in March and they looked at the virus now in August, they were different genetic viruses. They could tell they were a different type of virus. There were 24 nucleotide differences, for those who are into it. And of course, the second one, when he came back from Europe to Hong Kong, he didn't have any symptoms at all. This was just picked up in a routine screening. So now, if you look at this, I guess one's first reaction is one of disappointment. In other words, he did get a second infection, a proven second infection, a different kind of subtype of the virus, different what you call a clade of the virus, and therefore his first infection didn't seem to protect him. But on the other hand, it's actually good news. I'll tell you why it's good news. Because when we do vaccinate somebody, it's not really the aim that you're going to actually prevent infection. What you want to prevent is somebody who's infected getting ill. So the fact that they do get infection but don't have symptoms is actually quite a good sign, because that's just simply going to boost the innate immunity, the person's own immunity. And therefore, we're looking at a vaccine design. This is actually quite good news, that the second infection that this person did get didn't cause illness.
But I've got so many questions. Obviously, we can't ask them all now, Professor. But as you've said many times, this is a novel virus. We're still learning things about it. There's news that it's mutating and there's different strains. But it seems clear with stories like this, the more and more evidence accumulating, that it's not the flu. We know it's not the flu, but we also know that we know enough, I guess, over decades, if not centuries, of the influenza virus that you get roughly a new strain every season, and you can develop a vaccine to it. What implications does this have for herd immunity, for a strategy from countries like Sweden? If we're told, well, we just wait until a certain percentage of the population has recovered from the virus and then we can create a herd immunity. But now it looks like maybe if we get reinfected, what does that say about herd immunity?
Well, you know, herd immunity, like from Sweden, when they try to achieve herd immunity through natural infection, it comes with a heavy price, and Sweden paid that heavy price, and they admitted they paid that heavy price because they had a much, much greater severity of the infection and much greater mortality than their neighboring countries in Scandinavia who didn't go for that natural, you know, trying to get herd immunity by natural infection. The neighboring countries did do lockdown and all the precautions where Sweden didn't. And of course they paid for it. They had a high mortality, much higher than the Scandinavian. And I don't think any country is going to repeat that experiment again. Mm. But yeah, I think where coronavirus differs very significantly from influenza is that influenza, although it keeps changing, influenza keeps changing, but when it changes what we call its antigenicity. In other words, how the immune system sees it. And it keeps on seeing a different virus every time, and that's why we have to vaccinate every year to keep up with those changes. Coronavirus, although in this case it was a slightly different, what you call clade, but antigenically it was identical. In other words, that the immune system hasn't seen any difference yet. But obviously what is good news is that it still stopped the person getting an illness when they got reinfected. Getting reinfected is not a problem if it doesn't cause illness. In fact, this is probably what happens, for example, with all our other vaccines. It doesn't necessarily stop infection, but it does stop illness. And that's really the kind of main aim of the vaccine.
Last question, Professor. Taking into account what you've just said, a person who gets reinfected will not get ill, but they can still prove infectious to others.
Now you asked a $64,000 question. Of course, that we don't know.
Okay.
Does this Hong Kong man who was just simply tested positive on a routine screening, is he infectious or not? And of course, that we don't know. One can't, of course, do that experiment. And of course it would be very difficult to try and prove that one have to do very extensive epidemiological studies to answer that question. I think what we're hoping is that no. Because certainly if you look at the other situations like measles and so on, where a vaccine doesn't necessarily stop reinfection, but those reinfections are not infectious.
Okay.
Hopefully it will be the same.
Well, yes, we obviously hope, and as we're learning more about the virus, we'll just keep safe and stick to all our precautions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're going to be doing that for a long, long time still. That's also not going to switch off when we get a vaccine. We'll still have to do that for a long time, even after a vaccine.
Professor Barry Shoup, thanks once again for your expert testimony, for keeping us apprised and up to date with all the new developments. We look forward to speaking to you again, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you. Thanks, Paul.